Good afternoon. It's 5:06 and 52 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Rachel Turner.
We're having a lot of line breaks as everything thaws out. That's what happens.
Moorhead City Council discussed the annual audit and recovery after winter weather.
More than $40 million have been allotted for non-public schools in the Commonwealth.
Some Fayette County students are back in the classroom.
Lawmakers are considering a series of laws that impact children.
Meanwhile, advocacy groups say children should be consulted as those laws are crafted.
In sports, high school basketball returns to the 16th regional tonight.
Bud Luke has a stock report.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 36. We'll have a look at your region's extended weather forecast after this news.
Moorhead City Council held a special meeting via Zoom yesterday evening. Typically conducted in January, the meeting was held primarily for the reading of the audit report for the fiscal year 2020. Some budget irregularities were noted due to various projects and operations being paused because of the pandemic, but overall, the municipality received a clean bill. Lori Deerfield is the audit director for Kelly Galloway Smith Goolsby, the firm that compiled the report.
And the next two pages is our independent auditor's report on internal control over financial reporting and on compliance with government auditing standards. So basically, as part of doing the audit, we review your internal controls. We test for compliance with laws and regulation. If any deficiencies are noted, they'd be included in this letter, but it is a clean report. There were no issues noted.
Also during the meeting, Councilperson Glenn Teeger spoke on behalf of the Moorhead Utility Plant Board. He is urging MUPB customers to be patient as crews conduct repairs following last week's ice storm. Teeger added, so far, customers have only been without water during the time of a break repair and should be aware of any boil water advisories in the area.
The U.S. Department of Education has allocated $40 million to Kentucky for emergency assistance to non-public schools in the state. All non-public schools may apply to the state for reimbursement of COVID-19-related costs or to provide COVID-19-related services. The application will be available online for 30 days, with a 3-day submission window beginning on day 27. The application is expected to be available at the end of February. KDE will announce when it's open on its website and social media channels. The Kentucky Department of Education, KDE, will provide virtual training and technical support for schools completing their applications in early March. Award notifications will be issued to schools within 30 days after the application submission window closes.
Two bills which update child support laws cleared the Kentucky House of Representatives on Monday. WMKY's Jonathan Burton has the story.
House Bill 404 would update Kentucky's child support guidelines to be in line with federal guidelines. Under the measure, the new law would ensure child support funds are being used appropriately and altering how those with less than 50-50 custody are charged. The House unanimously approved HB 404 by a 93-0 vote. House Bill 402 increases the threshold of late child support payments before being charged with a felony to $5,000. HB 402 passed the House floor by a 71-22 vote. Both bills now head to the Kentucky Senate for consideration. For WMKY News, I'm Jonathan Burton.
Kentucky Youth Advocates Children's Advocacy Week is urging Kentucky lawmakers to prioritize kids' well-being in this year's legislative session. Participants are asking state lawmakers to invest in infrastructure to close Kentucky's digital divide, establish a minimum age that a child can be charged with an offense, and work to connect kids to community-based services instead of relying on the juvenile justice system, among other reforms. Felicity Krueger is an Adair County high school senior. She says legislative issues almost always affect kids, but rarely involve their participation.
I mean, you can make laws about kids and not include kids, but they're the ones who are going to be affected by it. Kids are the next generation in the future, and we want to make sure that we have good futures when we all grow up.
More information about Children's Advocacy Week can be found at kyyouth.org.
Legislation addressing sexual offenses committed by police officers while on duty passed the Kentucky Senate Monday. The measure passed with a 35-0 vote. If passed by the House, Senate Bill 52 would modify third-degree rape, third-degree sodomy, and second-degree sexual abuse statutes. Law enforcement officers could be charged with those crimes if they engage in sexual acts with a person under investigation, in custody, or under arrest. Senator David Yates of Louisville has represented individuals in civil court that have been sexually exploited by police officers. He believes the bill would help root out bad police officers in the future. The bill now goes to the House of Representatives for its consideration.
Parents of kindergarten through second grade students in Fayette County were able to send their children back to the classroom Monday. Currently, COVID-19 cases are declining in Lexington, which is a relief for many parents. One parent tells LAX 18 she's taking it one day at a time.
I just took it as a grain of salt. We're just kind of just still taking it one day at a time and trying not to get too excited about things because I'm very nervous that things will get pulled.
The next group to return will be third through fifth graders, and they are expected to return sometime in early March.
The Kentucky Department of Education released a new comprehensive guidance document yesterday. WMKY Sarah Mead has the story.
Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the department has worked to provide clear, up-to-date instructions for safely facilitating school operations. Education Commissioner Jason Glass says KDE staff reviewed all previously released guidance for accuracy and to ensure the recommendations continue to reflect the best practices for Kentucky school districts. The document does not include guidance related to the spending of emergency relief funds awarded by the CARES Act or the CRRSA Act. The document only includes guidance by KDE that applies to continued school operations. All guidance documents previously released by the department will be archived on KDE's website. For WMKY News, I'm Sarah Mead.
Public health officials are concerned that new mutated versions of the COVID-19 virus being found in the U.S. spread more easily and vaccines could be less effective against them. In last week's statewide COVID-19 update, Governor Andy Beshear confirmed two cases of the COVID-19 variant from the United Kingdom have been reported in the Commonwealth. Eric Court is the laboratory director at Blue Water Diagnostics, a company that runs test sites throughout Kentucky. He tells Wave 3 News laboratories like his have had to rapidly adjust to an unprecedented virus.
Nobody knew how to manage a pandemic, at least at this level, a year ago. So this is new to everybody, both patients, laboratories, physicians. We're all just struggling to keep up.
Court says the current PCR test can't differentiate between the strains, but will detect any variation of the virus as positive.
Ohio has been a leading state for distributing the COVID-19 vaccine to long-term care facilities. Ohio has conducted the fifth highest number of doses through the CDC's Pharmacy Partnership for Long-Term Care Programs. Peter Van Ruckel is the head of the Ohio Healthcare Association. He says the federal initiative is wrapping up, but there's still a need for the vaccine.
There are new people who come into facilities all the time. There are new admissions. There are new staff members that are hired. And we need to have a mechanism for those folks to get vaccinated.
The state is expected to release more information this week about its plans moving forward for a federal vaccination program to help long-term care facilities.
A local teacher is still dealing with symptoms from having COVID-19. John Crisolago tested positive on December 4th after attending a Thanksgiving gathering with his family. He eventually spent 6 days in the hospital in a pressurized room. Crisolago tells WYMT throughout the pandemic his wife and son followed the guidelines, but still all tested positive.
I thought, well, I'll just follow all the guidelines that they're saying. I thought I was at least a pretty safe person going with the normal. We would wear our masks. We would wash our hands frequently.
He wants people to realize the severity of COVID-19 and to take it seriously.
The recent winter storms have wreaked havoc across the Commonwealth. Many local roofing companies are working to help residents schedule repairs. Big League Roofers owner Riley Wolf tells WKYT his business has been very busy.
I mean, we typically see anywhere from, 10 to 20 calls a week, come in for leaks or missing shingles. Over the last couple weeks, we're averaging anywhere from 10 to 20 calls a day.
Most of those calls have been leaks and water damage because of the buildup of ice on roofs. While the winter threat is over for now, the repair work is just getting started.
A Kentucky husband and wife were arrested today by federal agents for allegedly participating in the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. According to the Lexington Herald Leader, Lori Vinson, a nurse, and Thomas Vinson were arrested in Owensboro. Their charges include knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct which impedes the conduct of government business, disruptive conduct in the Capitol buildings, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing the Capitol buildings. Lori Vinson made headlines shortly after the riot when she spoke to multiple media outlets about entering the Capitol on January 6th. She said she's been fired but would do it again. The Vinsons are now in federal custody.
Nearly 4 years have passed since Preston and Wince Walters were arrested and charged in the murder of Lewis County resident Justin Johnson. WMKY's Lakin Hupp has more.
The case began in March 2017. Justin Johnson was reported missing. After several days, his body was recovered, and Preston and Wince Walters were arrested and charged. Preston Walters claimed he and Johnson were traveling to his cabin in Garrison. Johnson bent down when he told Walters there was a deer. As Walters attempted to shoot the deer, Johnson was rising, which caused him to shoot Johnson. Sheriff Johnny Bibbins said the trajectory of the shot didn't match the testimony, as well as Johnson's body was covered with leaves, then placed in a creek where the body was later found. A jury trial for Preston Walters is scheduled to begin on March 1st at 9:30 a.m. Wince Walters is scheduled for a pretrial hearing on March 17th. For WMKY News, I'm Lakin Hupp.
Taking a look at your region's extended weather forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with a low around 36. Tomorrow, increasing clouds with a high near 56. Wednesday night, a 20% chance of showers before 11 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 29. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 44. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 27. Friday, a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 4 p.m.
On our feature segment today, residents of the North Fork Mobile Home Park in Moorhead are asking the community for help. WMKY's Keneally Roberts has the story.
Residents of the park began hearing rumors last year that a new retail development was to be built in place of their homes. Ashley Skaggs lived in North Fork for over 5 years. She says a comment made in a September City Council meeting made her realize she needed to help.
I found it on Facebook and I went and listened to it, and I got really upset at one of the things the developer said. He called the trailer park a blight.
She says since residents were not receiving any official communication, she started the project with her friends to simply spread information, but it soon changed into something more concrete.
The more we kind of talked about it, because it was a source of it was a source of conversation for quite a few weeks there, right before we moved out. And so one night I was talking to Jimmy, my best friend, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I wish we could do something for these people. And he was like, why don't we start a GoFundMe? And I was like, why don't we?
Once Skaggs and her friends had the idea, another question came up. Will anyone help the residents to move?
Because there's some trailers up there that aren't going to move. And if they do happen to hook up to them, there's a chance they won't make it through a move. So you're going to have people who are going to have to abandon their trailers and try to find new housing.
Then a special called meeting with the county provided a much-needed answer.
And that's when we learned, through that meeting, mind you, not through the landlord, not through the owner, not through the property manager, that's where we learned that if everyone moved out by March 31st, the owner would pay $1,000 directly to the moving company.
Skaggs says while the $1,000 is helpful, there are other questions that need to be answered.
Now you've got people with all these different situations. You know, I don't know how many people up there have lost their job because of the pandemic or have had their income reduced. So now you've got that on top of finding somewhere to move to, because I know for sure at least one mobile home park, I think it's the one over on 60, they won't let you live there if your trailer's over a certain age.
Skaggs says with all the uncertainties, one thing is for sure. Money in the hands of residents won't go a long way. In the event that GoFundMe doesn't raise enough money, she says they have a plan, but she hopes it won't be needed.
We'll just go and start with the elderly couples first, because they're probably on a fixed income of some sort. And then from there, you know, families with children, and then just go down the list.
To donate, search for North Fork Mobile Home Park Moving Fund on GoFundMe.com. For WMKY News, I'm Keneally Roberts.
Support for MSPR comes from Main Street Medical Associates, 214 East Main Street in Moorhead. Main Street Medical Associates is now open to the Moorhead community, providing primary care and addiction services with counseling by board-certified and licensed providers. Same-day and next-day appointments for primary care, medical evaluations, occupational exams, physicals, and addiction services. In-office or telemedicine available by appointment by calling 606-784-8682. That's 784-8682. Main Street Medical Associates on Facebook and online at mainstreetmedical.live.
It's 52 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Moorhead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Rachel Turner and Wiley Tanner. And we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Lake and Hup has a look at sports, but first I want to say thank you. We're so glad that you can spend time with us on this Tuesday evening.
High school action resumes in the 16th region tonight. For WMKY Sports, I'm Lakin Hupp. Taking a look at girls' high school basketball action across the region tonight, Rose Hill Christian travels to Greenup County at 6 p.m. Morgan County hosts East Carter and Fairview hosts Bracken County at 7:30. In boys' regional action tonight, Russell hosts Fairview at 6 p.m. Lewis County hosts Bishop Brossett. Boyd County hosts Greenup. East Carter travels to Elliott County. Fleming County hosts Bluegrass United. All four of those games are set to tip off at 7:30 p.m. We will have scores from all of tonight's games tomorrow during the morning edition. The Rowan County Senior High School basketball team is back on the practice court today as they prepare for a busy remainder of the week. The team is coming off a win on the road against Madison Southern last night, 61-52. Next, they'll face Elliott County in another road contest tomorrow evening. Head coach Matt Stokes says now the team is just hoping to limit any further interruptions this season.
Yeah, we didn't get to work at all last week. We got in the gym yesterday, so we got one day in. I think we played Montgomery County last Saturday. We had to take a whole week off because of the weather.
Tomorrow evening's matchup in Elliott County is set for 7:30. The Rowan County Senior High School boys basketball team has one more day in the gym before their midweek matchup with Ashland Blazer. That game will be the first the team has played since the 14th, when they took down Lawrence County on the road. But now, head coach Sean Thacker says the team is back to knocking the dust off after missing last week due to the inclement weather.
Conditioning-wise, you're just kind of starting from, I wouldn't say scratch. I think our kids do the best they can in the situation that they're in to try to keep some level of conditioning, but it's not a perfect world by no means.
The Vikings tip off in Ashland tomorrow evening at 7:30. For the third time in her career, Moorhead State women's basketball Gabby Crawford has garnered Ohio Valley Conference Newcomer of the Week honors. Crawford enters the final week of regular season ranked 34th in the NCAA, with her 8 double-doubles sharing the top spot in the Ohio Valley Conference. Her 184 total rebounds also ranked her 36th in the nation, while also ranking 38th in the country in block shots with 35. Head coach Greg Todd says the OVC has some tough competition this season.
Girls have fought hard, and I couldn't ask for any more. We are playing a lot of young players, and there's a lot of very experienced teams that are in the OVC this year, and it's just kind of been one of those. But it's a game, and we don't have the record we'd like to have, but at the same time, we're positive about the approach.
Crawford and Morehead State conclude the 2021 regular season at home, hosting Tennessee State and Belmont Thursday and Saturday at Johnson Arena. The Morehead State men's basketball team is reviewing film from their 56-48 win over SIU Edwardsville on the road last night. The Eagles were hoping to clinch the second seed in the Ohio Valley Conference with the victory, as they move to 15-3 in conference play. Head coach Preston Spraldon says the review helps the coaching staff to hold the players accountable.
You know, we're not going to judge our performance by the final score. It's not always going to be indicative of how well or how poorly we play. So, you know, just held our guys to a really high standard, and we'll see how we respond. Coming off a poor defensive performance at Tennessee Martin, and obviously against the team that 2 months ago, we just weren't as good as we are right now. So it should be a good response for us.
The Eagles are gearing up to host Tennessee State on Thursday. Limiting tickets are available on msueagles.com. And that's going to do it for sports. For WMKY, I'm Laken Hupp.
Bud Luke has a look at the stock report right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from the Morehead Community Recycling Center. Maintaining a safe operation, CDC recommended health and safety guidelines are followed. The Community Recycling Center is a partnership with the City of Morehead, Rowan County, and Morehead State University. Located near the Morehead City Park with a 24-hour drop-off service, curbside service, and more information at 784-1250. Facebook and online at moreheadrecycling.org.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. The markets at the end showed very little change in terms of the major indices, although the NASDAQ Composite came back from an earlier sharp sell-off. And stocks were really helped out today by friendly comments from Jay Powell, Federal Reserve Chairman, concerning near-term monetary policy, as the Fed Chairman emphasized that the Fed would not make any changes to the current accommodative stance toward monetary policy. And at the close, the Dow Industrials finished with a gain of 15.66 at 31,537.35. The S&P 500 was up 4.87 at 3881.37, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 67.85. at 13,465.20. The NASDAQ did make quite a comeback, as earlier the NASDAQ index was down almost 4%. And as mentioned, stocks bounced off of their lows when the Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell, in remarks before Congress today, reassured that the Fed would be there to continue to provide liquidity to the markets and would continue to have an accommodative policy that would not change anytime soon. Tesla was down 1%, and it dropped earlier as much as 13%. And, of course, Tesla was helped out by the general comeback in tech stocks in the afternoon. Apple was also Apple finished with a gain of 0.3% higher today, Apple was up 0.3%, and this came after dropping more than 2% earlier. So many tech stocks had very sharp selling earlier in the day and were able to make good comebacks in the afternoon. Energy and financial stocks, once again, were the best-performing sectors. Energy in particular has been on fire with a gain of over 20% since the beginning of the year. The 10-year Treasury held steady today with a yield of 1.36%. Gold was down slightly to finish at $1,804.70 an ounce, and crude oil was up 31 cents, finishing at $62.01 per barrel. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was CSX down 89 cents at $91.69. It was App Harvest down $3.64 at $34. PPL was unchanged at $27.48. Marathon Petroleum was up 92 cents at $55.77, and Lowe's was down $3.82, finishing at $168.59. Reporting from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird, this is Bud Luke.
Taking a look at your region's extended weather forecast, tomorrow increasing clouds with a high near 56. Wednesday night, a 20% chance of showers before 11 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 29.
And that's going to do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Tanner Boyd, Joe Lewis, Greg Jenkins, Paul Hitchcock, Keneally Roberts, Carrie Stambo, Heather Fannin, Jonathan Burton, Laken Hupp, Sarah Mead, Megan Jones, Josh Grogan, Wiley Tanner, and Daria Denisenko. WUKY's Josh James, the Robert Baird Company's Bud Luke, and our feature segment came from WMKY's own Keneally Roberts. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, Kentucky. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Rachel Turner and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5:30.